You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. Making a celebrity guest appearance today is the gunner, Mike Musselman. So what are you doing? You're bored? So what you've been doing for the last hour is sending me text messages trying to make me laugh while I'm doing the program, sending stupid stuff.
Making you laugh. I was making you laugh. I heard you giggle, and then I was sending text messages because I heard a pop. So I went, oh, man, he left the thing. So I started texting as fast as I could to hear pops on the radio. Then you turned it off.
Exactly. I'm like, what the hell? Why is that popping noise happening?
Oh, yeah, because you sent me a text and I forgot to turn it on.
No kidding.
I heard it too and I was like, oh, he left it on. Then I kept as fast as I could start putting text back up.
Hey, did you ever see any crazy Korean stuff? I was just telling stories about watching a company gunny get hit, one of their Marines, like 23 times with a baseball bat after he had a negligent discharge as we were cleaning up on a range. You ever see them do, I mean, be themselves in front of us? Which is not very kind.
No, it wasn't. No, not really, because I was probably a Corporal Lance Cooley back then when we were working with them. I didn't really pay much attention to him.
Yeah.
When I first met him, when I first started working with them, I just thought they were weird.
Well, you know, they have this reputation. And Mike and I came in the Marine Corps. What year did you come in the Marine Corps? 83?
85.
I came in 83, got to the fleet in 84. So Mike and I came in at about the same time. And the Koreans still had this post-Vietnam reputation for being, you know, hard. They were no-nonsense, hard-ass fighting force. And so I got a chance to see that. Hell, that gunny probably fought in Vietnam. At least he swung a baseball bat like he had. He was pissed. But anyway. But I thought it was funny.
Yeah, they were good guys. I mean, they were strong. You know, it's just, I don't know. Like I said, I didn't have a lot of interaction. To me, the guys that were working with us, I'm done. Nice guys. But, I mean, the Filipino guys, the same way. I mean, Filipino guys, I could tell you crazy stuff about with the Filipino Marines. You know, the Zoles guys, shoosh. Those guys were insane.
About? You know? Did you ever drink any blood?
No. But no, we were like on the Green Beach, there in the Philippines shooting mortars, and we had a lull, you know, so I don't remember why, but we kind of slowed down shooting, and then we had a big stop. We stopped before, you know, during this. Well, all of a sudden, probably like 10 minutes into our ceasefire, all of these villagers that were living out in this jungle area, you could see them all out coming out in the impact area, picking up the aluminum fins of the mortar rounds. You know, so they would be out there scavenging for mortar round fins because that, you know, that's aluminum and it's worth a lot of money for them. And then we got the green light to go high again, but they were on our range. And so when we brought up to the Filipino Marines that were with us for security, the guys get, like, three of them get in his Jeep, go driving out in the impact area and start shooting these people. And we're like, what the, you know, stop, what are you guys doing? You know, and they kind of look at us like, you told us to get, to move them off the range. Yeah, no, we didn't tell you to go shoot them. You know, like, they didn't care. I mean, right. It was like, yeah, they're Greedo, you know, villagers. They're like the natives. They live in the jungles. Right. They're like the dirty people.
Right. Mike, talk about, I was telling a story about, do you remember where Nasser Wasalam was right before, you guys, 3-5 wasn't near there. You guys were more over towards Havania, but it was 1-1 battle,
yeah.
It was 1-1 battle space. But it was the first Sunni community as you went west out
of
Baghdad.
Was that by Chicago?
It was east of Chicago. It was between Chicago, Route Chicago and Abu Ghraib, the prison. So is it
No, I never went there.
Yeah, so
went by it, I think. But.
Right. So, they had an IED get blown up there, and they just did the death blossom, right? And we did an investigation.
Yeah.
There were civilian killed, and the Iraqis, you know, looked at us like, why are you bothering us with this shit, right? Like, look,
right.
Those people knew that IED was there. They did nothing to prevent us from running into it. And we had,
right.
I can't remember if there was any Iraqi soldiers killed or what. But, I mean, their attitude was very matter of fact. It's God's will. You know, there was, we assumed that there would be some kind of other shooting, at us, and we engaged anything that moved. And, if there were civilians there, then, inshallah, it's Allah's will. And, they could have told us it was there. They did not. It happens. Why is this an issue?
Yeah, they really had no respect for other.
Yeah.
But they didn't get the whole, get the populace behind you type of thing. They just didn't care about the populace.
Yeah, it was like, no, if we're the strongest, they'll be on our side. Yeah. So,
yeah. If they don't, they're not on our side, they will be after tonight because we're going to go to their house and beat them all up.
Yeah. And we are going to be the strongest tribe. And that's how it works. And, you know, so it's,
right.
So it's interesting when you see this whole concept of, you know, human rights, it's like the rest of the world does not see it like that. All right. Now I want to roll out. This is my prediction on the transgender, policy, that's going to come out today. So I posted this on the website yesterday, but this is my prediction.
Right.
All right. Here's the headline. Transgender policy prediction. It's all about the recently unveiled worldwide deployable policy. Okay, so first paragraph. Secretary of Defense Mattis, quote, "You're either deployable or you need to find something else to do. I'm not going to have some people deploying constantly and then other people who seem not to pay the price in the U.S. military." He said that on February 17th of this year. Next quote from Secretary Mattis on that same date. "If you can't go overseas and carry a combat load, then obviously someone else has to go. I want this spread fairly and expertly across the force." Third quote. "They need time at home. They need time with their families. We may enlist soldiers, but we re-enlist families. That's the way it is. If you can't keep the family together, then you're either going to lose the family or you're going to lose the soldier, and that's a net loss for our society and for our military." And the final quote, Mattis stressed that those who are injured in the field would be exempt from the new policy, saying, "We'll find a place for them. That's a special category. They've earned that special status." Okay, so here's my commentary. Based on those comments, I believe the SecDef will recommend the following to the president. One, that citizens who are physically and mentally qualified for military service, who identify themselves as transgender because of gender dysphoria, okay, I footnote that. One, gender dysphoria or gender identity disorder is the distress of a person, distress a person experiences as a result of the sex and gender they were assigned at birth. Okay. All right. "And who do not intend to seek a surgical remedy to their dysphoria be allowed to enlist and serve as long as they remain worldwide deployable. Two, that citizens who are physically and mentally qualified for military service, who identify themselves as transgender because of gender dysphoria and who intend to seek surgical remedy to their dysphoria while on active duty or in the reserves not be allowed to enlist and serve because such a decision will render them non-worldwide deployable for extended periods of time, which in turn makes them incompatible with military service. Write it down.
Yeah.
So that's my prediction.
I mean, that's the common. That's all common sense.
Right. Right. So that's what's in Secretary Mattis's recommendation. My prediction
is Ballywick.
Well, and again, I think it was important that he lay the groundwork for the transgender policy by laying the groundwork for the worldwide deployable policy. So when you, and that's what we talked about, look, that our system of deploying is based on you being a widget. I don't care what your sexual preference is. I don't care what color you are. I don't care what religion you are. I don't care what sex you are. You need to be qualified and you need to be a widget. When you cease to be a widget, we medboard your ass out, and we do that all the time.
Yeah. I mean, that's that whole, and I forgot who I was talking to yesterday. We were talking about something, and I said, we were about the whole, it's such an insignificant, yes, you have a role in the Marine Corps, but once you start believing that you're kind of an asset, you're like, you're living in a fairy tale land, man. They will replace you, and, you'll get whatever trophy or whatever thing for going away, but don't ever forget you're replaceable, and the Marine Corps is always going to be there, and it just, this mindset of, well, I'm different or I'm special, and, the Marine Corps is benefiting with me here. No, not true. It may be functioning, well, but it's going to do the same thing without you there. But these people that believe that their sole existence of being a Marine is, no, man, it'll get rid of you. It'll find somebody else. And then when they're, just keep on going. It's going to be there forever.
Yeah, and we do it all the time for all kinds of reasons. I mean, hell,
oh, yeah.
Mike's lucky. Were it not for General McMonagle, Mike would have been medboarded out of the Marine Corps. We're not allowed to agree.
Yeah, that would have been gone, man.
Yeah. Somebody give him a chance to finish his enlistment and let him get healthy again.
He took a chance on me.
Right. Because what happens is, when you can't work, what do we do with you? Put you on the shelf for 2 years till you can get better so we can use you for a year. That's throwing good money after bad. So, and again, it's not a personal thing, but I mean, in order, you got to be able to deploy. And this
is for the good order and discipline of the Corps.
Right. Got to be able to do it. So, yeah, so I think that, I don't know what made me think of this yesterday, but I thought, that worldwide deployable piece is the centerpiece of all of that. All right,
I didn't go out tonight, real quick. I didn't go out today because it is freaking cold and it's raining. Two things that I don't like.
It's below zero in Montana, though. Come on, shake yourself.
Yeah, but at least it's not rain. Rain, the problem with snow is fine. The snow, it can melt and everything else, but okay. But rain and cold penetrates you, man, to the bone.
Oh, my God. Listen to you. You're from Minnesota. I know you don't like to talk about it, but come on.
What does that mean?
This cold. It's not like cold's a big deal for you.
Dude, just because I did something 32 years ago, 34 years ago, doesn't make me acclimated to it anymore.
Oh, so you've changed? You've thought out of from your Minnesota?
I was a kid.
Oh, all right.
Your body's a little bit more resilient as a kid. Not now. Let's go to North Dakota in the wintertime, and then I'll head first dunk you into a snowbank. And then I'll be going, hey, what do you mean? You did this when you were a kid. He'd be like, you son of a bitch.
It's cold.
I'm not a kid anymore. Exactly.
You know what I was thinking the other day? You know, in the spring in North Dakota, when it gets to be like 20 degrees, you're like, yeah, sweatshirt weather. And literally,
yeah,
I mean,
the
Twin Cities is like the banana belt compared to like North Dakota. North Dakota gets that cold, cold air, and you look at the Twin Cities, and they're in the 30s. You're like, damn. And I remember seeing Bud Grant, like, oh, man, that guy's cold. Pfft, it was a joke. Anyway, I was thinking, like, in the fall, late fall, when winter starts and it gets into the 20s, you think, how in the hell could I ever think this was warm? Then you go.
Yeah.
Then you go through the weather, man. And then you go through the winter, and you're like, yeah, 20, woo! Holy shit.
Money.
The, you know, in interacting with the Marines from my platoon when I was a second lieutenant, I still have my platoon commander notebook, right? Name, rank, mm-hmm. social security number, blood type, data rank, EAS, base pay, allotments, all written in pencil on every one of my Marines, marital status, home of record, car, birth date, present address, education, swim qual, rifle, gas mask, which squad they were in, their phone number, their GCT, allergies, PFT, pro cons, and their religion, all in my notebook. And so I'm going
through.
So what
are you going to do, blackmail?
Yep. Exactly. One of my PFCs, you know what his base pay was in 1984?
$200 a month. $234 every 2 weeks.
You know what? You're almost right. $575 a month.
I remember that. Yeah. I came across something like an old, whatever they were, not like, what, the LEF.
Yeah. Your old LES.
And I found an LES when I was like a PFC or a Lance Corporal, and it was like $230 every 2 weeks. I'm like, what?
Exactly.
That wouldn't even feed somebody these days. How did he survive?
You ate for what? Breakfast and lunch in the chow hall was like 50 cents, or you were eating for free. So,
yeah.
Email. Mac, was the gunner in the Marine Corps at Camp Pendleton when you used to be able to drink on base when you were 18?
Yes.
Tell me the E-clubs, man. Every E-club in every camp?
Yeah, all the E-clubs. Well, those were when the Marine Corps was doing it right, teaching its young Marines how to be socially responsible back in the day.
Back in the day. Yeah, the E Club was this room
yeah.
with a bar and a pool table and might have had like a pong machine or some shit like that and some TV. And let me just tell you, that place you
had, yeah, pinball. They had pinball machines. Yeah, some kind of old early Pac-Man or Pong.
Right.
And then like, you know, and then a pool table. Of course, it had to have a pool table.
Right. And then a bunch of half broken furniture.
Yeah, or mismatched furniture from different eras of bars from back in the 60s.
Because the shit was always getting busted, you know. And
well,
half the time,
it was very. It was always broke.
And the reason
a lot of things were.
Yeah, the reason for that was they didn't want Marines going down to Mexico and drinking in Mexico, so they let them drink on base.
Well, we couldn't even go to Mexico. Mexico was like
off limits.
We always heard about, don't go to Mexico. You're going to get killed. And we're like, oh, we got to go to Mexico.
Exactly. That's first on the list.
What's this fear of Mexico? What is this thing that they're talking about?
Exactly.
Tijuana. And then when we first went down there, we were like,
is this it?
They told us, it's off limit. You're going to get trouble. So we're going through the gate. We're going through the Border Patrol checkpoint, wherever it was back then.
Right.
And we're like, where's the military? You would think that the military would be there, like, watching you as you cross, and then you're in trouble. No, they didn't. No one was there. And even back then, though, what we found out was when we went there, we ran into Navy Shore Patrol. It was on duty in downtown Tijuana, walking the street, in uniform.
Yeah, because, those sailors, they got no sense. Yeah, they don't know how to act. They don't know how to act on Libo. Come on.
Yeah, so they it was like, holy crap, look at this. We're safe. Maybe Shore Patrol's there.
Yeah, the Shore Patrol shows up, and what do Marines do?
Well, yeah, we take off before they even show up.
Exactly. What do the squids do? They stand around like, oh, what's going on? Like, where did all the Marines go? Why did they all run out the back door? Because they're smart.
Right.
They know how to evade. The E Club. And then you would see like a car pull up to the E Club, right? And half the Marines didn't even have cars, right? I went through mine. I went through my list of Marines and what kind of cars they had. This is hilarious. My staff sergeant didn't have a car. Every second or third Marine doesn't have a car. 72 Ford, 74 Nova, 75 Chevelle, 77 Toyota. And mind you, this is 1984, okay? And Lance Corporal Croning, he had a 1980 Camaro. He was pretty much the man. Lauder had a Ford, probably a truck, knowing him. But it was a different Marine Corps, man. You didn't, the money you made was less. You know, you didn't have a car. You hitched a ride, and I don't know. It was, and you lived. You're still living in squad bays at the time. Did you ever live in a squad bay?
Oh yeah, open squad bay. That's how I became the Marine Corps, man.
Yeah,
I liked it actually. It was nice.
It was. Let me tell you, shit was straight in the squad bay.
Yeah,
it was straight.
There was nothing wrong with living in the squad bay.
It was, yeah. It was different. It was different life. Up was up and down was down. And the NCOs with their rubber curtain, right, that you had to knock on.
Our guys, it was a poncho liner. Yeah, they were using a poncho liner.
And God forbid. You would walk, like, they would do this to like, new joins. Hey, where's Corporal So-and-so? He's back behind the curtain. Just walk through it, and he's back there. Right? Walk through the curtain unannounced when you don't knock.
You're done, man. That's a death sentence, dude.
You just committed, like, a violation of, like, the sacristy of the Vatican. Right, the holy of holies. You walk through the poncho liner without knocking. You're like, oh my god.
Well, the Vatican wouldn't have beat the crap out of you.
Exactly. They would have just sent you back. Yeah. Oh my god.
They would have said, "What are you doing here? Get out of here.
Get out of here.
You know, innocent mistake. Okay, I'm gone. But that was insane times back then, man.
Different world than it is today. All right, make a prediction. Big demonstration in Florida as students leave school and are demanding action.
Kids, get back to school. Get back to learning, because obviously you're not doing a good enough job if you're asking those stupid demands.
Yeah. So at the end of the day, Mike, what happens with all of this?
At the end of the day, they're going to go back to school. At the end of the day, there's going to be a lot of hoopla about nothing. There's going to be rhetoric about nothing. There's going to be a pontification. And then something else will capture the attention of the news, and we go back to normal.
So,
until the next one. That's right. The sad thing about everything that goes on. Because, again, like, you know, I heard you saying earlier, there is some solutions out there, but no one's willing to hear those. They want to put forth the ridiculous ones. You know, the ones that there's no way in hell that are going to work. But those are the ones that we want to talk about. Right?
No, it's what we want to talk about. And again, the point is, look, you know, if you think AR-15s are the problem, then you know, that I would love to see. Let's ban the sale of them, and then let's see what happens. Do you think the people that are crazy and want to do this are not going to find the means to do this? Right? They'll find it.
Right.
Trust me. It'll be a pistol, a semi-automatic pistol with an extended magazine. It'll be a sawed-off shotgun with an extended magazine. It'll be another device. So again, if you want to chase weapons in a nation of 300 million, the criminals and the crazy that are determined to do shit like this are going to find a way to do it. So you know, what's the answer? The answer is identify the crazies and have a debate about should they give up some of their rights because of the threats they've made and the mental instability they've shown. I say yes.
Right.
You get the First Amendment light, okay? You don't get because you threaten the group, right? We're gonna lighten up your First Amendment rights. Is there a problem with that? We need you to show us that you can live in our community and be safe and not threaten the rest of us, because our rights to be safe trump your right to be a crazy First Amendment idiot. Okay.
Yeah.
We would not have allowed this back in the colony. Okay. We would have put your shit outside the gate, and you could have get killed or eaten or whatever. Okay. I want to change gears real quick. The future Marine War Rifle Squad's going to be 15 Marines, three fire teams of four, a squad leader, an assistant squad leader, and your technology guy. Okay, the squad leader is going to be JFO qualified, Joint Fires Officer qualified. He'll carry an M4A1. The assistant squad leader will be JFO and IROC, incidental radio operator, and would carry the squad radio and the squad UAS. All right. He would carry an M4A1 and the PRIC 117 radio. What's the 117? Who do we communicate with on the 117?
The 117 is the, I think it's the competition. It can do SATCOM.
Ooh.
Oh, no. The 117? Is it the Gulf or, I don't, it depends on which one it is. It's just one of them, there's the 117s are a little more capable than the others. But it can't be the full-size 117. It's got to be the smaller version of it.
Yeah, it's a man portable one. Yeah, but it is. I'm looking at images for it. It does show a SATCOM capability. It does show the vehicle mounted one, and then the unit that you pull out of the vehicle mount, which would be the man portable version. Yes.
Yeah, one is like it's like half the size. It's like a looks like it's like a brick of it. You know, it looks like a small brick. But I'm pretty sure it's SATCOM capable. Yeah.
Yeah, Harris Corporation's ANPRC 177 multi-band man-pack radios have been produced in variants A through Golf since the 1990s. Okay.
Yeah, the 117 Golfs are like, well, shoot, man. I mean, I came in when it was the PRIC 77. You know, the box of radios.
And, exactly.
You know,
exactly.
You'd sit there and say, I shackle.
I set yeah. Alpha Kilo. I set Romeo X-ray Lima. Boo, boo, boo. The designated marksman would carry the IAR with a more powerful optic. You told us about this, and a QAS counter UAS weapon similar to Battelle's Drone Defender. Tell us about it. Do you know about this Drone Defender thing? How do you knock?
Yeah, I don't know which one they're using, but there's all sorts of different systems out there where you can, you know, knock drones out of the sky.
Do you blind them?
One of them.
Do you blind them or knock them out?
You knock them out. The one I liked the best, and I don't know if it got deployed, it was like in an M203, and it was like a little net. It was so cool. You shoot it out, it goes flying, and basically fouls the propeller or the whatever of it. And then there's ones now that, or there was other ones that were like heat seeking. There were a lot of cool ones. I don't know which one they're using.
All right. The IAR would be issued to 2 out of 4 Marines within the fire team. Since the IAR cannot mount a grenade launcher on it, the Grenadier would be issued the M4 with an M203 attached to it. Another go.
Why didn't they buy the 302?
Another option would be to give the Grenadier the IAR and have him carry either the M320 or the M320, the M32A1.
Yeah.
As recommended,
as
recommended by 3.5, each personal weapon would have a suppressor on it. So, tell what's the M320 or the M32A1? What is that?
Oh, those are the HK grenade launchers that are better than everything else, too.
What is it like the M79? Is it? Explain to me.
Yeah, you could. Okay, so, but the nice thing about the 320 is you can actually. It comes in a kit, so you can either mount, put it together like a blooper gun, so it had it standalone separate, or take that off and then mount underneath a rail system gun. But it's a side mounted, so remember ours is breech loaded, it opens up, you have to open it up and then put the round in there and slam it back down. Theirs opens, the barrel opens to the left or right, so it just opens to the side, it kind of kicks out.
Wow.
So you can actually fire more ours are limited to the size of the cartridge that'll fit into a breech loaded gun. And as 2 or 3 rounds, so 40 millimeter rounds develop, get better. Some are going to be longer because you want different ranges to them. And then, the HK you can do, and every one of them you can do. It's perfect, man. It's a great gun.
All right. Our current construct is the fire team is built around an automatic rifle. Our proposed construct is that all have automatic rifles. And then
warfare's going to change.
Then he talks about you may know about it. Let's fast forward to 2000 when the Center for Naval Analysis published a report entitled Development of the Squad Historical Analysis. The U.S. Army was unable to field an effective light machine gun as a replacement for the bar. This was to prove a critical weakness, particularly in light of the conference's attendees' observation that in order to fire or maneuver, the squad needed to be equipped with the suppressive fire of an organic light machine gun. Rifle fire, even if automatic, is inadequate. The study also found that in Korea, the squads lacked firepower because they had no organic light machine gun. The bar did not have the power of a light machine gun. Lessons from 3 wars, 2 against peers and 1 against insurgents, noted that the bar was no substitute for a light machine gun. This study concluded that the firepower of the squad lies in its organic light machine gun. We should conclude the same. The M249 squad automatic weapon is no longer the answer. The military community already has a potential answer in the LSAT, lightweight small arms technology.
Oh, God.
Hold on. Let me just finish, and then you can wait in. Program with its already tested LMG. A data sheet by Textron Systems states that the LSAT is 9.4 pounds empty, 19.1 pounds with a 1,000-round load, a significant reduction in weight from the M249 with a similar load, which is 31 pounds. This means that an LMG that is just a few pounds heavier than an IAR would be fielded and provide sustained, automatic, and accurate suppressive fire at a range greater than the IAR. Thoughts on that?
You know, I'm getting I get sick and tired of personal agendas. And the LSAT program, if you look up the LSAT program, it's been around since the 80s, dude. And you cannot sell me on the idea that it's been around since the 80s trying to define this program. It's caseless. You know, it's the wave of the future. It doesn't work. And it's a gimmick. We get a saw, an M249, that fires caseless ammo and it's a few pounds lighter. but we end up with the same problem. It's inaccurate. You know, the beaten zone is huge. These are what we call purists. You know, machine gun purists. When we went to the 416, the HK, to replace all this, all of these machine gun purists said, oh, but the machine gun has always been and will be, you know, the cornerstone of maneuver. Then rewrite the book. You know, Bill Lynn did that.
Right.
Caused everybody to like, oh my God, this is heresy. He's a heretic. Burn him at the stake. Just rewrite the book. There's the solution. Okay, if that is still the cornerstone of maneuver in the infantry squad, then rewrite it. That's all you got to do. Take a pen, paper, and rewrite it. That's all Bill Lynn did. That's all the other people did in history and changed warfare as we know it today. It's going to change again.
So what's your point about the
quit chasing it? We got the solution right now.
What's the solution?
The solution is where we're at right now. We have every Marine in the rifle squad has the capability of being, you know, the basis of maneuver, has the basis of accurate, sustained, automatic fire.
With the IAR.
With the IAR.
Okay, his contention, this is a captain that I'm going to get on the program.
I know.
Who wrote this, but his contention is that the IAR, has a max effective range of 100 meters.
What?
Yep. Why are you stuttering?
Because that's ridiculous.
This is a quote from his article in the Marine Corps Gazette. This paragraph is entitled LMG. The IR can only deliver accurate automatic fire out to about 100 meters while in full automatic fire.
Man, dude, I don't even know how to respond to that. I really don't. I mean, is this a joke? I mean, was his buddies put up to this? Has he been an infantry guy?
Yes, he is.
Has he even fired one?
He is an infantry guy.
Dude, I don't want to embarrass this guy. I don't, because I'm going to withhold my comment because I'm embarrassed for him, actually, if he wrote this. And this is in, you know, that the IAR is only accurate to 100 meters in automatic fire. Now, is that his own personal test he did this?
There's no, it's an unfootnoted comment.
So, yeah, I would ask him the question is where is the scientific data to back up this claim? What are you talking about?
You know what?
Is this your own personal claim?
Even a novice that's an infantryman would see that claim and say, we have a weapon that's only accurate. Okay, so Mike, when you talk about accuracy of automatic fire out to beyond 100 meters, how do you do that with an IR? Because we both know that when you switch a weapon into the automatic mode, for instance, if we watch the people that we fight, you hope they're in automatic mode because maybe the first round they shoot might come close. Everything else is going over your head as the weapon rides up. So how do you employ the IAR effectively against the target? Is there a tripod that goes with it? Is there bipod that comes with
There's
it?
There's bipods that go with it, yeah. There's bipods that come with it.
Okay, so the bottom line is you'd fire it with the bipod down, and anybody who knows a lot about machine gun gunnery knows you got to take out the slack from the weapon. You got to be a stable weapons platform, and that's all part of delivering accurate fire. That sounds like,
yeah, and you're firing you're firing it in right. controlled bursts, just like you would machine gun.
Right.
You know,
right.
I had this argument when I was on active duty, and we were talking about people like same thing. They, you know, but they would think that you don't fire the M240 all 100 rounds at one time. I know that. Well, then why would you fire all 30 rounds in a magazine at the time out of IAR? you know, and then they would, because they were not, they're again, they were machine gun purists. They didn't want the IR to succeed. So they came up with these stupid, okay, so you got to fire the IR all 30 rounds at one time. Okay, so you got to fire your whole belt at, you know, at one time. What? No, that's stupid. Why would you do that? Exactly. The problem, Mac, is, again, the book needs to be rewritten, Mac. It does. Because the IDR is competing in the mindsets of people that are belt-fed guys. It's not a belt-fed weapon anymore, boys and girls. If anything, it's a BAR.
Right.
And if you look at the success of the BAR in combat, I mean, why, think about it. How many times do you see or you hear about the BAR, you know, overcoming Japanese positions? Or, and, you know, and in certain cases, the Germans. Now, people are going to tell you this. Here's where the argument comes into, because everybody brings this back. Well, Germany had the MG-42, which was a belt-fed, gas-operated machine gun. Yes, it did. And it overwhelmed the Allied firepower. Yes, isn't it?
But did they, that was in their machine gun section in their company,
right.
Not in their squads. In their squads, they had the Mauser, they had that machine pistol.
They had rifles, machine pistol, that fired 9mm.
Right.
And then later on, they had the MP44, the Sturmgewehr, which fired a 7.62 Kursk, which was the kind of an assault rifle cartridge.
But
they did have, later on in their squads, they did have, not the MG-42, but they had the MG-34, which was the earlier version of it, which is a lighter machine gun. But they carried it in companies or in, you know, smaller sections, assault sections, I should
say. Right. And again, a machine gun, right, tripod, the ammunition that goes with it, that's not a one-man event. So a light machine gun got to be either drum, built around a drum, or built around a magazine.
So, right.
Okay.
And the MG-42 is still a team weapon.
Yep. No, without a doubt, right? I mean, that thing, let me tell you, for those of you that have never seen a machine gun fired and you've seen in videos people free gunning a machine gun, that is not the way a machine gun, God invented it. When you see it locked into a tripod and the devastation that it can affect, when you see a machine gunner manipulating that mechanism, traversing and searching on a target, holy shit. Your jaw literally, when you're standing up, your jaw literally will hit the ground. It's absolutely positively devastating.
Another argument about the machine gun was ammo consumption. That's why they needed a team. You know, when you're talking about carrying 7.62 bullets around, you know, you need a lot of people to share that load. That's a lot of weight, man. And you gotta be really controlling on your fire discipline, because you run out of those bullets, you're just humping a heavy piece of metal. The other thing that showed us when we were toying palms with IR was the argument of suppression. It used to drive me crazy. You know, cover me. I'm going in. And then you're like, what do you shoot at? I'm shooting at likely enemy position. Why would you do that? Well, I'm suppressing them. I'm keeping their heads down. Why don't you shoot them in the head? That'll keep their head down, too.
But Mike, you made a great point months ago when we were talking about this subject. And you and I were talking, and my frame of reference, and you yelled at me about it, was, Mac, you're old core. You're iron sights. Right? Half the guys can't even see that far anyway without their glasses on. Right? And so, yeah, you suppress the window because that was the last known firing position, and you're shooting through iron sights, right? And you're shooting through your combat sight of your iron sight.
Right.
And yeah, okay, but that's no longer the case. You've got an optic. Normally you have more than enough optical power to pop that dude in the head.
Yeah,
and I think that's
the days that you can actually see your enemy. We didn't have that before. Even in World War II, we didn't have that capability. Germany did have that capability.
Right.
The only people that could have seen their target were the snipers. Because they used optics. Everything else truly was a suppression shot.
Right.
They shot where they thought the enemy fire was coming from because they couldn't see the enemy.
Right. Right.
So that's the kind of the mindset that everybody's built upon, Mac, and that's the problem with today's military. Someone needs to go ahead and rewrite the way we do war. So we need another Bill Lynn to step forward and say, you know what? Here's how we're going to fight.
Here's how we do
Take
it.
Take the heat.
Here's how we do it these days.
Yeah, everybody gets set. Someone be the fall guy.
Okay, so
eventually
I want to, because
history will.
There's a couple other things I want to ask you about before I let you go. One is comm related. So is there a better weapon that you've seen, light machine gun, that can be used as part of the Marine Rifle Squad?
I would be lying to say no. I haven't seen it, but as technology advances, as we get smarter with how we do things and make things smaller and we embrace technology, then yeah, I think it's very capable later on.
Okay. All
right now, not so much.
So right now you think the IAR in that role is the optimum design and the fit for the Marine Corps?
For the Marine Corps, because you want something, you want to be a light force capable of hitting hard and doing things. You don't want to be a heavy junk army. You know, the machine gun is a great role for the Army. But the Rangers, if you look at the Rangers, they're a light force. What do? You know, they're embracing those concepts. But for big, heavy, unit-driven system-type armies, yeah, I think it's a perfect role. Keep the machine gun. But for the Marine Corps and its principles and how we conduct warfare, the IAR is exactly where we need to be.
All right. Personal role radio. The individual Marine currently does not have a radio with which to talk to other members of his squad. This is a gap that must be quickly rectified. During the Operation Iraqi Freedom, the Marine Corps used a British-made PRR, personal role radio. It was a great tool to have because of its UHF capability, could talk through an urban environment. Today we have the ANPRC 153. It is not ideal for mass use at the individual level. Blah, 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 blah. Should everybody in the squad be on a radio?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Comms is, you know, comms goes with everything else. Look, you have good comms, you're going to win the battle.
Right.
You know, when everybody can talk and everybody can communicate and you can get your point across reasonable manner,
you're going to move faster.
You're a lot more effective. You move quicker. Right. Your survivability, mobility, everything goes up there.
Yeah, and you combine the ability to talk with a suppressor on the weapon, so you knock the ambient noise down. And again, so much of the confusion when shooting starts is just hearing what somebody's yelling. You know, what? Boom, 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 boom. You know, you're yelling it six times to get it heard once. And that's just the way it is. So if you could improve that, everything happens quicker. Everything happens quicker.
Oh, yeah.
Let's see. Okay. All right. All right. No, interesting little article. I thought you'd find the IAR piece a little bit interesting, but arguing for a more lethal, a more mobile, and a more capable squad. But I'll tell you, that's putting a lot on a sergeant. And we didn't even get into the drone that they'll have, the tablet they'll use to call in supporting arms. And
well, you got to be careful. You don't oversaturate them either. Seriously.
Right. That's what I'm saying. That's all part of this 15-man squad. Three fire teams of four with those capabilities, being able to talk to every one of them. Each fire team should be equipped with an unmanned vehicle, a micro unmanned vehicle with a camera, radio receiver, and transmitter can weigh mere ounces. This would allow the fire team to conduct close-in reconnaissance of rooms, buildings, bunkers, etc., and provide Marines with the ability to safely identify targets and engage those targets from behind cover. Right, and then he gets throws out brand names like Black Hornet Nano, Black Hornet Nano, and Throwbot XT. Now these are all wheeled, right, Mike?
Yeah, I don't know about the other one, the Black Hornet, but the other one was the wheeled. There's one called the Hummingbird, and it came in the camera package was day and night, and the thing was big as a hummingbird, dude. It was so small, the whole kit could fit in your cargo pocket, and it was amazing what this thing did. It actually flew like a hummingbird. It was pretty cool.
And then the final thing on unmanned system is each squad should be equipped with a lightweight UAS quadcopter, such as the Instant Eye. A system such as this would allow for lightweight day-night secure means for the squad leader to execute reconnaissance, identify targets, and gain information on an objective. This system would be easily transportable and capable of autonomous flight, thereby allowing for a patrol-like effect against areas of interest. So that's kind of a no-brainer and already being fielded, yes?
Yeah.
So you can imagine, that's a little bit different rifle squad. Same basic concepts that went ashore on Iwo Jima, but we're still looking for that, you know, we're still in need of that automatic weapon that went ashore on Iwo Jima. And then you look at all the other things, the tablet to call in supporting arms, something ground capable to look in rooms in an urban setting, something a quadcopter that you can fly to check out the vicinity around you for your own security, and also to do reconnaissance stuff. So you can see that the demands on a squad leader, and that guy's promoted faster than Mike ever got promoted. He'll see sergeant in a shorter period of time. And so you can see why there's this discussion about, I don't think it'll ever happen, but why there's a discussion about staff sergeants and squad leaders. Because it's a more robust job. It's a harder job. And if we're going to embrace this stuff, we have to educate that guy to be able to be up to that task. And that's not easy. In fact, you have to educate all three of them, his assistant and whoever the designated marksman is. So, interesting stuff.
Yeah.
All right, Mike, well, that'll do it. Thanks for checking in today on your day off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no problem. I'll talk to you there.
Anything exciting going on today because it's cold? You doing anything?
No, nothing exciting.
All right. Well, hey, have fun.
Yeah.
Have fun today.
Yeah, I'll try.
There you have it, Mike Musselman. More of All Marine Radio coming up next on your home for it. The All Warrior Radio Network. I've got some emails I want to get to, and then you are going to hear. I'm not going to end the show right now because I said I was going to play and finish up General Zinni, and we're going to do that. So we'll do that today. So the show is going to have a little bit of extended play today. So if you're just joining us and you're looking for hour one, you'll hear that probably in about 40 minutes. So just hang with us, and I've got some email I need to get to on some of these questions, and then you'll hear Colonel Zinni talking combat concepts. We'll finish that. So don't touch the dial. More of All Marine Radio coming up next right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network. Are you looking for the perfect gift for somebody who's in the military, for a first responder, for a hunter, for an outdoorsman, or somebody that just likes cool military stuff? I've got the perfect gift for you, the Battle Mug. Starts with 10 pounds of aluminum, it's milled, machined, anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug, scope, laser, camera, light. Put a lid on it and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. Farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at BattleMug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out. BattleMug.com.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when the group can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nielsen. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.